Rivalry week is upon us with so much at stake. Tigers, Cajuns, Saints, and the Falcons kick things off on a Thursday night. We'll get deep into it and talk about who the winners are going to be and what the ramifications are going to be from it. It's a busy show. Glad you're with us today, Tuesday, November 26th, 2019.
Jackson by himself, shotgun snap, drops back five, cocks his arm, pass in the end zone, caught over the shoulder, in the middle, touchdown Baltimore! For a second time, Marquise Brown hauls it in! A second touchdown pass by quarterback Lamar Jackson. Ravens 13-0 over the Rams.
It's okay, you know, but I'm trying to win the Super Bowl, and we taking the game at a time. I'm not worried about MVP, you know. If it come, it come. I'll be satisfied, but I'm trying to win the Super Bowl. That's a team award, and that's what I want.
Guys that are mentally tough, but understand that, hey, whatever we did tonight, all right, has nothing to do with what we're going to do moving forward unless we allow it to. And that's the mindset that we've got to have as coaches, as players, to a man. You know, you look, everybody, we owe it to each other to do better. And I feel as responsible as anybody. And I certainly have to do a better job, but can't wait to look at this tape, fix it, and then we get ready for the Arizona Cardinals next week.
Was that the quarterback that LSU just tore apart when he was the Heisman Trophy winner for Louisville? Boy, Lamar Jackson, five touchdown passes, and the Baltimore Ravens just dismantled the LA Rams of Sean McVay, made them look just terrible. What a game for the Ravens, and they are they're the only team that beat the New England Patriots so far. They're sitting at 9-2 and playing really good football. That was the end of that week of the NFL, but we're here, and it's great to be with you. Happy Tuesday to you and yours, my main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 103.7 The Game, and we are Acadiana's number one sports station, and darn proud of it. I know tomorrow will be a busy, busy travel day for a lot of you. So early happy Thanksgiving to one and to all, and be safe and be careful. And boy, we have a lot to be thankful for. And you know it. I know it. It's just great. What a great year it's been. What a great football season it has been for our Tigers, our Cajuns, and our Saints. LSU with a big rival game against Texas A&M this Saturday, 6 o'clock kickoff. You can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game, pregame show at 4. Joe Burrow, we've got lots of sound to play for you today, and I love it because I love to hear from them. Joe Burrow talked about last year versus the Aggies.
So there was the – so we were playing really well in overtime. We were getting 2 point after 2 point, and then the last time we had the ball, we scored the touchdown, and then D ran a great route. We had him open, and the ball got tipped at the line, and so we didn't end up. We actually still completed it, but he didn't get in the end zone for that 2 point play. So that one kind of run through my head a couple times if I could have waited a little longer and found the window. So that one came off the field mad because I kind of knew that they were rolling on offense. They were going to go down and score and possibly get the 2 points. So that one kind of runs through my head.
What about the stuff that you couldn't?
Great memory from Joe Burrow, but again, the big picture. Here's how Burrow summed up this game this Saturday.
It's just another game for us. We feel like if we play the way we're capable of playing, we'll win the game. But they're obviously, you know, they have four losses this year. Three of those teams have been in the top five, or in the top five currently, and Auburn was in the top 10 for a lot of the year. So their losses are really good losses. They're a really good football team. We're going to have our work cut out for us.
This is their third number one team they have played this year. They opened up with Clemson. They played Alabama when they were number one, and now they get LSU with the Tigers at number one. You always learn a lesson, and from last year's game, Joe Burrow says they're well equipped in this phase of the game?
Yeah, I think we're much more well equipped for 2-point plays this year. You know, we still have a bunch in our back pocket that we haven't used this year. And our red zone offense has been, you know, one of the best in the country, and that's a tribute to Coach E and Coach Joe working on Wednesday nights, coming up with these concepts. So I think we're much more well equipped this year because of that period and our coaching staff.
So, Joe, is this a rivalry game?
I wouldn't say it's a rivalry game. You know, to be honest, I don't know who LSU's rival is because we have so many trophies, and, you know, it seems like 4 or 5 times I come and sit right here and you guys say it's a rivalry game. So I don't even know anymore. But this is a big game. Chance to go 12-0. They're a really good football team.
All right. Grant Delpit says he is almost 100%. He's going to have to play through this ankle injury. He's one of 3 finalists for the Jim Thorpe Award for the nation's top defensive back, along with Georgia safety J.R. Reed and Ohio State cornerback Jeff Okuda. Grant Delpit says they're preparing for all kinds of strange things that could happen in this game.
You know, just preparing. We do a lot of preparation stuff. You know, we do like last plays, you know, Hail Mary. Just all the, you know, weird things that can happen in the game, just make sure we prepare for them. So, you know, definitely a 2-point play is going to come in, you know, it's going to come in effect.
Now, you heard Joe Burrow says, I don't know if this is a rivalry game. We have so many trophies out there. Here's how Grant Delpit summed up this big game.
It's a big game. It's an SEC game. Now, even when, you know, they hadn't beat us in all those years, it was still a big game. You know, they're in the SEC for a reason. So, you know, spirits might be a little higher because of what happened last year, but, you know, we're not thinking about it like that. You know, it's another game for us, chance to go 12-0, you know, have a perfect regular season. So, you know, that's big time in our books.
His sidekick at the other safety position, Jacoby Stevens, named SEC Defensive Player of the Week for his efforts against Arkansas with 3 sacks. Here's how he talked about LSU A&M 2019.
And everybody knows what we did. I mean, what happened last year, and it's going to be a very emotional game, especially for our fans. I know, and I expect everybody to be in Tiger Stadium, you know, ready and rowdy to go. But as the players, we have to keep our emotions in check because we are actually out there and we actually make checks. We have to do certain things on the field. So, you know, we're gonna play with high energy, but we can't let that emotion take over us and make us do things that aren't smart.
Copying the words of their head coach, he sent the message loudly and clearly, and the players have understood that, and that's terrific. On the other side, Jimbo Fisher, whom LSU with Joe Oliva wanted not once but twice, couldn't get him. The Aggies got him for an exorbitant fee. One time he was going to be the head coach, and then F. King Alexander, as they triumphantly lifted Les Miles on the shoulders of players and fans were giving him a standing ovation, said, we can't fire this guy now. And Joe Oliva had his hands tied behind his back. Oh, my God. What a nightmare, and how long ago does that seem? Thank God that's long, long, long ago. Jimbo Fisher, head coach of A&M, talked about the guy who is going to win the Heisman Trophy, Joe Burrow.
How much time do you spend looking back on that game? You played against him last year. Consider how much different.
I mean, we review the game and so it, and you see tape of them periodically about people you play during the year. You know what I mean, by tape and what they've done or whatever. But I mean, last year I thought against us, he was a great player. I mean, he played great that night, running, throwing the football. I'm sure he's much more comfortable in what they do. I guess they've changed some of their scheme schematic. I don't know the inner workings or how they do it, or if they've just gotten better at it. I don't know, but I'm sure he's much more comfortable being in Baton Rouge. You can remember, he's a guy who moved all the way across the country from Ohio to Louisiana and had to make adjustments. You don't take into account how that affects guys. And I'm sure he's more comfortable there. He's better there. They say he's obviously the leader of that team, and you can see it. I mean, I think the guy's playing outstanding football. I think he's playing as good as any quarterback I've seen in a long, long time.
Jimbo Fisher, part of Nick Saban's staff at LSU, along with Will Muschamp and Derek Dooley, and the list goes Kirby Smart. A whole bunch of guys that use their time here to further their career, to learn the nuances of the game, and now they're all head coaches, or were. Dooley offensive coordinator at Missouri now, after a stint in the NFL and after failing at Tennessee. However, Jimbo Fisher says he's looking forward to coming back to Baton Rouge and Tigertown.
They're good all the way across the board, and they're playing as good as anybody in America. So, you know, going down there, it'll be a tough environment. I mean, I've been there many times on the road and as a home team, so I know what it's like. They have great fans, great people, and a great team, and we got to put this one behind us really quickly and move on and get ready to play a tremendous LSU team on the road.
Ed Orgeron talked about A&M and talked about a guy who – sneaky good, and that's Kellen Mond, who maybe is not 100%, maybe not living up to the billing that of expectations that were bestowed upon him this season, but he still has Ed Orgeron's attention, and Coach O talked about the quarterback of the Aggies.
He's dangerous. Last year he had a lights-out game against us, running the ball, throwing the ball, big receivers, great scheme. I think this is one of the better players we're going to see all year.
And finally, back to Joe Burrow. LSU is going to honor a whole bunch of seniors. This will be their last trip through Tiger State, and they want to remain unscathed at home, unscathed during the regular season, go into the SEC championship game 12-0 is in Atlanta to take on Georgia. Joe Burrow said something that I think the whole LSU Tiger Nation wishes, and that is one more year?
Of course I do. You know, this place is super special. I went up to our trainer and I said, you guys find me a sixth year? You know, I'm coming back. I unfortunately was not able to find that sixth year, so this will be the last one.
This will be the last one. He will get he'll be the last one called out of the chute. It will be an incredible ovation for him, and deservedly so. What a year this young man has put together. A year that no other player in the history of LSU football has come close to putting up. And the numbers speak for themselves. As we said yesterday, the first team in SEC history, and they've been playing football a long, long time, to have a passer, a quarterback with over 4,000 yards, two wide receivers, both over 1,000 yards, and 1,000-yard running back. Just spectacular. We'll get some more thoughts on LSU, including some recruiting news. Billy Embody, Go 24/7 Sports, joins us next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. If you're a Buku Rewards member, you know all the great savings that you get in over 60 of their establishments in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. Not only is this week's game important for obvious reasons, but boy, it's also important for recruiting. The Houston area is a hotbed for LSU. How about if you could go to a recruit and say, look, we beat Texas and we put a whooping on Texas A&M. Billy Embody of Go 24/7 Sports is kind enough to join us. Big weekend for recruiting. Billy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Jordy. How are you?
I'm terrific. Happy Thanksgiving early to you and your family. Boy, what kind of strides has LSU made, and what has the impact been of a Coach Herman and a Coach Fisher at Texas and Texas A&M when LSU has relied on that city and that state to get a lot of talent?
Yeah, I think with Tom Herman at Texas, I think with the season they're having, things are starting to kind of sit on very questionable waters for them and where that program stands, because they're not developing talent. They're not developing players. They are recruiting very well. I believe they're right in the mix for a top five class, had a top three class last year, but they're just not developing anyone. And even Sam Ehlinger has regressed a little bit this year since last year. So there's a lot of red flags going up around Texas right now. I think for Texas A&M, they're still on stable water when it comes to recruiting. I don't think they're recruiting at the level of an LSU or an Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State, places like that, but they're still a very good recruiting staff. They have strong ties throughout the Southeast, so they're always going to be kind of in a battle I think, with LSU for players, and LSU's certainly gotten their fair share of them and will continue to over the next few years especially, but they're still in that position of, okay, selling a new product, a new vision for Texas A&M and kind of building that program back up. So the two programs are in pretty different places right now, but LSU and Texas really, as the seasons kind of wind down in the regular season, they're not in the same stratosphere even.
I gotcha. I don't think anybody foresaw the season that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is having. He's going to enter the NFL draft in all likelihood, and Chris Curry's kind of fallen off the face of the earth, so you might expect him to do the transfer portal situation. So they need a running back, and the best running back in the country apparently is in the state of Texas. We've talked about him before, Zach Evans. What's the word? What are you hearing lately about him?
Yeah, I think Zach is somebody that certainly still marches to the beat of his own drum. A lot of people think that with his official visit to LSU over the Auburn game weekend and potentially popping up for the Texas A&M game, people are going to be kind of on red alert for him. But he's taken a couple visits this fall to other places as well and popped up on different campuses. So he's somebody that, like I said, will kind of be somebody that will make a decision real late in the process, I think. I believe he's going to sign early, but, I mean, in reality, he really just hasn't really made up his mind in terms of what he's going to do, how he's going to approach things, and take it from that angle. But LSU sits in a really good spot. I think if Zach were to decide today, I think he would pick LSU, and that would be big for LSU for sure. But don't sleep on Ty Davis Price and John Emery doing exactly what a lot of people thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire would do what those two would do to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which is overtake them. And they're two very talented backs, and as they kind of settle in and get more comfortable, they'll be able to perform and contribute in this offense. And so I think it'll be a lot more difficult than people think just for Zach to come in if he signs at LSU and play right away.
I'm with you. Ed Orgeron made it a priority, said we need another running back. There's got to be a backup plan if Evans does not come. Who else is on their radar screen?
Yeah, Devin Achane is somebody out of the Houston area as well, actually, that they're keeping an eye on. He's kind of more of an all-purpose back, somebody that can really catch the ball, has elite speed, high-end speed. He committed to Texas A&M actually just, I believe, last week. But he's somebody that LSU's kind of just held off, kept kind of, I guess at arm's length. And he was really high on LSU for a long time. And so for LSU, I think they could bring him in on a late official visit if they felt like they were maybe losing steam with Zach Evans and call him up and say, hey, we've got a spot for you. Do you want in? And he'd probably take it. Another one to watch is Lancaster running back Kevontae Bradford. He's somebody out of Lancaster, Texas, and he's really, really, really high end in terms of speed as well.
He is Billy Embody. Go 24/7 Sports. When people come up to you or they address you with your social media and they ask you why are people transferring, what kind of answer do you give them?
Well, I think with the way LSU's recruiting right now, I think that's something that a lot of players are taking notice of and just making decisions that they feel like are best for themselves and, maybe seeing the writing on the wall or maybe they've been passed on the depth chart, things like that. But I've never really understood why you, especially with the way LSU season has been going, why you transfer out during the season like this. Everybody's got their different reasons and different ways of going about their business, but really it's probably to just find a new place that's best for them.
And I guess the same is holds true for those that decommit, that have been on the LSU commit list for months and months and months, and now all of a sudden they decommit. Is that just the same thing, handwriting on the wall?
Yeah, you've seen a couple guys drop off here as of late, and I think it's exactly that. Some writing on the wall, some tough conversations to be had, and really I think I don't like the way certainly some schools do go about it this late in the process because you are a month away from early signing period in that time. But hey, I mean, if at this point you've kind of over-recruited somebody already and you're saying, hey, you might not be playing early, you might not be playing at all, here's who the guys we're going to sign, I think that's a fair enough thing to say to somebody after they've got their senior tape in and gives them time to maybe look around and try to find a new home. And especially now with you have those three official, let's say you have four or five official visits left, you can still kind of find your way. And even if that means you end up signing late, I mean, there's going to be schools that are in demand for guys that are of the caliber that LSU is recruiting, but sometimes it just won't work out. And I think, just kind of, it's just kind of the nasty business side of things where they've got to have those tough decisions to make.
Billy Embody, go 24/7 Sports. It's Will Wade's birthday today, and he's not sitting there eating birthday cake with the family. He's in Texas. He told me he's got three stops today on the recruiting path. That man never stops.
Yeah, no doubt, and he's got some top targets in Texas. I think one is probably Gerald Colbert, the five-star 2021 big man. That's somebody to certainly watch in that state, and he was supposed to come in on an official visit earlier this fall and ended up just trying to reschedule it with some nasty storms in the state of Texas that derailed that visit. So he'll be somebody that certainly hits campus at some point, but yeah, Texas has been good to LSU for the most part, and they'll continue to prioritize the guys over there.
Billy Embody, the best in the business. He really is. I can't thank you enough for making our show all the better when you come on, man. I greatly appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, and thank you again so much.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jordy, to you and yours. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. So this week's game's important. On the field, it's important. It's important for recruiting as well. Don't ever forget about that. That recruiting process never, ever stops. Saints back in action Thursday night. They'll be taking on the Atlanta Falcons. Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television, will join us next on that one. But let me tell you something about 103.7 The Game. It's the station that keeps on giving. Mr. Lester's. You can get a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse, located inside Cypress Bayou. Enter to win 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. We'll be back. Hey, we welcome you back. It's time to talk about the Hoodats and the New Orleans Saints as they get ready for a Thanksgiving night festival in Atlanta to take on the Falcons. A nice rematch after what they did to us a couple weeks ago. And nobody knows it better than Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television insider for the New Orleans Saints. Mike, hey, happy early Thanksgiving to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm great. Happy early Thanksgiving to you, my friend. I'm great.
I'll be having my leftovers. I'll be watching with anticipation on Thursday night. But let's go back to Sunday, man. I guess when coaches say forget about records, and when you play somebody that knows you and you know them, you play them twice every year. Man, that Carolina game scared the dickens out of me. How about you?
Yeah, they were lucky. It kind of reminded me in kind of a different way of the Cleveland game last year, where the Cleveland Browns came in, and if they would have made a few kicks, they would have won that football game.
Yeah.
But they didn't, and it kind of propelled the Saints to go on a roll after that. The Saints had that game under control. I think Cam Jordan would like to take that penalty back. If that hadn't happened, I think it would have been a different football game. But the bottom line is, I think when you're a great team, you win games when you don't play your best and when you play undisciplined football, and that's what happened to the Saints.
That was so un-Cam Jordan-like. What did he just have a brain freeze? What happened?
Well, he claims that he was trying to knock the ball loose, but you saw him talk to the official right afterwards, and it wasn't as if he was it seemed like he was lying about it. He was pretty earnest talking to the official, and afterwards he said, I was trying to knock the ball loose, but I got to be smarter than that. And he took the blame. But, yeah, it was a very un-Cam Jordan-like moment. And the crazy part is DeMario Davis, who is having an unbelievable season at linebacker, made a great play. He's celebrating his sack, all excited. He looks back, and then there's a flag. So you talk about going from, you think you made this game-changing play where you're going to give the offense the ball, to you're staying on the football field, and it proved that he'd stay on the football field a long time after that.
Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television, Saints-Falcons Thanksgiving evening inside the I can't call it the Georgia Dome anymore, but I'll call it the Georgia Dome, whatever. My biggest takeaway from the Saints' win over Carolina was the emergence of Jared Cook. Man, he had 99 yards against the Panthers, including one where, I mean, he went upstairs about 10 feet and beyond to snag one. I thought he was terrific.
That's exactly what this offense needs, Jordy, in so many ways. And we've been talking about it week after week that, and really since last year and maybe the year before, that Mike Thomas has to get some help. It's amazing the numbers he puts up. If Jared Cook can keep playing the way he has, that's exactly what the Saints thought they were getting in the offseason, bringing him in after great seasons in Oakland. And he's going back home this week. He's from Atlanta, played high school football in Atlanta. So, you know, you would expect him to keep the momentum going. And, you know, I talked to Drew Brees after every game, and I thought Brees said something kind of telling to me that, you know, there's more of a trust factor now with Jared Cook. And the plays that he made really in Tampa when he went up to get that touchdown, and he talked specifically against Carolina when he went up to get it. When your receivers are making plays like that, you have more and more faith in them. And obviously they had to build that chemistry. They haven't even been together for a year. So the fact that Brees has more faith in Jared Cook and the fact that Jared Cook's making plays like that is only going to help out Brees. It's only going to help out the Saints. But it's really going to help out Michael Thomas.
He is Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television. Drew Brees on pace to break his single-season completion percentage mark yet again. More on that in a minute. I got to figure out what's going on with this offensive line. Armstead's out.
Yeah.
You're losing your left tackle, your left guard. You're going to have to put some people in. And what stood out to me more than anything else in the Atlanta loss earlier this year was the pressure the Falcons were able to put on Drew Brees. That's scary.
Yeah, and for years, if Armstead, you know, would get hurt, he seems to get hurt at some point during each season, you'd move Andres Pete over, and he'd play left tackle. But Andres Pete's going to be out for the foreseeable future. So you got a lot of young guys stepping up there. And, you know, Eric McCoy, it's really important the way he's played, Jordy, because you didn't know how he would step in and play for Max Unger, such a valuable guy on that football team. But the fact that he's stepped up, can you imagine if he hasn't played well, that offensive line would be in worse shape. So, I agree. Against Atlanta, they had their worst game of the year. But they, I thought they protected Drew admirably, especially on that last drive. And, you know, it wasn't their fault to breeze through that pick, which was uncharacteristic for him to make a throw like that. So, I think the jury's still out in this offensive line. They need to get Andres Pete back quickly. And we don't know how long Armstead's going to be out. But, you know, like I said, we've seen this with Armstead over the years. If they can get them back down, you know, right before the playoffs, that'll be good. But, a lot's on the line the next couple weeks. And really every game, as tight as this NFC is. So they need to get these guys back as soon as they can.
Home field advantage, so important. Ramczyk, Warford, McCoy, Easton, all with 66 snaps. Patrick, I don't even know how to say his last name. How do you say it?
I think it's Olamé, I believe, yeah.
Okay,
I think
that's he came in, had 56 snaps, so he came off the bench. That's going to have to be he only had 17 scrimmage snaps under his belt with the Saints this season, so he was thrown in there. Going to have to snap out. I can't figure Atlanta out yet again. I thought they were on a whirlwind, then they go and lose to Tampa.
Yeah, the NFC South is really bizarre. You know, watching that Carolina team, too, I really like Kyle Allen. You know, I don't know what the future of Cam Newton is, but I thought Kyle Allen played really well in that game. If they can get Kyle Allen, we talk about Michael Thomas, if they can get Kyle Allen any kind of help, that McCaffrey is an unbelievable player. He may be the best player in the NFL. But, Atlanta and Tampa and Carolina, it seems like you get a different team every week. But that's what's made what the Saints have done remarkable. And I think that, you know, Brees said something to me a couple weeks ago that Atlanta seemed to want that game more than them, which if you read between the lines, they may have overlooked Atlanta a little bit after that bye week. There's no question they're not going to overlook them this time. They would love nothing more than – to beat Atlanta on a national stage on Thanksgiving. So I really feel good about this game in a lot of ways. You'd like sometimes to go into a place where a team just came off a victory, so they're not as hungry as Atlanta's going to be. And, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs, so this will be maybe their playoff game because it's prime time. It's against the Saints. So I think it's going to be a close game. It always is with these two teams. And I saw a stat the other day, I believe, that Drew Brees and Matt Ryan have played against each other more than any quarterback in NFL history. And that goes back to all the rivalry games. So it's remarkable how many times they've played against each other.
Is Mike Nabors of Cox Sports Television. Brees, again, game on the line and two-minute drill. And that pass to Michael Thomas, I don't know if anybody else on the Saints offense knew what was going on. I just think the two of them kind of looked at one another and they just instinctively just made a play. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's the chemistry they have, and he has, you know, we talk about Jared Cook, he has full confidence in Michael Thomas. And what I'm amazed on that play, beyond that, and we say it every week, how did they leave Michael Thomas that open on such a crucial play like that?
Know. But
to me, it just shows you can't stop him. I mean, they could try to put two guys on him, but they can't stop the guy. You know, we can ask that question week after week. He's going to still get open. And if he gets any kind of help in this offense, he's going to break Marvin Harrison's record. He may break it if he doesn't get any help. But plays like that just show the greatness of Brees and especially Michael Thomas.
I'm sorry. I'm from a basketball state of mind. I'm double-teaming the dude. Somehow, some way, I'm figuring it out, and I'm trying my best to contain him. You can't stop him, right, but you can hope to contain him. I don't understand why more teams don't even try. Anyway, Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television. You mentioned DeMario Davis for the fourth consecutive game and sixth time overall this season. He doesn't come off the field. 100% of the Saints defensive snaps. He maxed his season high with 11 tackles. My goodness, he just gets better and better.
You know, Jonathan Vilma was a guy to me that was such a leader. I remember when the Saints won the NFC Championship game and Sean Payton demanded that Jonathan Vilma come up on the podium along with he and Brees and the players of the game because he knew what Jonathan Vilma meant to that team. But I'm here to tell you, I think DeMario Davis is better than Jonathan Vilma. I think he's a better athlete. He makes more splash plays, and he's a good leader, too. That's not to take anything away from Vilma, but it shows how good DeMario Davis is. I mean, he's a workhorse. He's a great locker room guy, but you know a great player, especially on the defensive side of the football, when they make that big play week after week after week. And the fact that, you know, they've hit on the draft, the Saints, the last 3 years, they've also hit on free agency. I mean, even look at Kiko Alonso stepping in for Alex Anzalone. I mean, whatever happens with this team, really the last 3 years, they've found a reinforcement that's not only been as good, but maybe sometimes better.
Apparently a Saints fan timed a marriage proposal with the winning field goal, and thank goodness that Will Lutz nailed it. That's a story for you right there, Mike Nabors. Get on it, right?
Yeah, I found out about that later after I left. I wish I would have known. You know, it's funny when Lutz said he kicked that, you know, I think everybody was nervous when they first saw the trajectory of that ball off of Lutz's foot, and he said his heart was fluttering a little bit too. Nobody was more nervous than that guy who was about to propose to his future wife. So I give that guy credit, you know?
I wonder if Lutz had missed it if she'd have said no.
I know.
She may have.
I know. Jeez. The timing's not right. We got to come back to this later.
All right,
yeah, you never know. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember the other thing about the Falcons game is that the Saints got completely away from the run. Isn't that correct? They threw it all over the place. They forgot to run the football. I don't see that mistake happening again. I think the balance factor will be there, don't you?
Yeah, and we've seen that in the Sean Payton era where, you know, he abandons the run early, gets impatient. But I think sometimes, too, the offense was rolling entering that game. You thought, well, maybe we don't need the run as much. Maybe we see something this game where, you know, we could just air it out a little bit. But I think that game will serve this team. You hope it doesn't cost them home field down the road. But maybe it'll serve them as motivation in a lot of ways that they know they can't look past anybody, A. And they also know that they can't abandon the run because – You know, we talk about it all the time, but it really is true. You know, Sean Payton and Drew Brees, their calling card is throwing the football, but they can't throw it unless this offense is balanced. And I love the whole dynamic with Kamara and Murray right now. And you know, we watched Mark Ingram tear it up for the Baltimore Ravens, and I'm really happy for him. What a great guy he is. And you're happy for him. But, you know, the fact that they haven't really lost a beat with Latavius Murray in there, again, shows how this front office is hit on free agency and the draft. It's really amazing. But, yeah, they got to let both of those guys contribute to be successful against Atlanta.
Yeah, Ravens look pretty darn good. It's taken us about 10, 11 minutes. I haven't mentioned the officials. Aren't you proud of me?
Yeah, good job. It's amazing.
but boy, oh boy. Right? What was the most egregious one in your book?
Well, Sean Payton will say it was a Jared Cook one. I'm going to say it was a late one that they gave Carolina because, you know, Breeze made the point afterwards, and I agree with him. The reason they made this rule was to take away blatant pass interference calls.
Yes.
Blatant is the key. And the term blatant is really misconstrued among these officiating crews. I saw a Texans play 2 weeks ago where it was blatant, and they didn't call it. They reviewed it, and they still didn't overturn it. So they're very inconsistent. And to me, to give Carolina that call late in the game, give them a fresh set of downs, it said two things. These rules are ridiculous, and also it's amazing the Saints won that game because at that point I'm thinking, okay, they're going to just run down the clock and kick a field goal and win this game.
Yeah.
And they missed the field goal. But, yeah, I thought Chris Collinsworth made a great point. I heard him say, you know, when you watch a Broadway play, they don't stop the play like four times and kind of ruin the momentum of the play. I know it's apples and oranges, but I'm at the point, Jordy, and I know the no call was big last year. I wonder if you experiment without any – how would an NFL game be without any replay for like a week? Or maybe a couple weeks. Let's see how it goes. I think you would want some semblance of replay, but I think there is too much because if you're going to make this rule and you're going to do it right and eliminate these blatant calls, these officiating crews have to be on the same page, but they're not. It's ridiculous. There's no really clean set of rules across the board.
Call me goofy, and that would be kind, but just the name of it. Challenge. I'm challenging. These officials are human beings. They're like, what do you mean you're challenging my call? I know what I'm doing. It sets a bad precedent. It just doesn't work. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it should work, though, Jordy. It really should. I mean, the fact that you're not giving these coaches like five extra challenges. You're letting them use the ones that they're allotted, and now you're giving them a little more leeway in what they can throw out there. But my thing is, if you're getting another set of eyes on this, how do they blow it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you would have taken that play in the NFC Championship game in New York, I would think they wouldn't have blown a play like that. But then again, I've seen plays similar to that they have blown. So I think it's bad with officials on the field not making the call. But how do you screw it up when you get a second look? That's the real troubling part for me.
It's a quick turnaround from my main man. He's going to be in Atlanta. Happy Thanksgiving in that city, that transient city. But, man, Saints need to win this one because San Fran looks pretty darn good. Are you surprised they didn't flex the Saints 49ers game?
Yeah, I thought they would wait and see if the Rams lost because, to me, the Rams lost on Monday night. I know they're playing Seattle in that game, but you know what? The Rams are pretty much out of it now.
Yes.
It's not like the Rams and Seattle are both vying. Seattle needs that win, but the fact that you could have had the Niners and the Saints, I'm very surprised. I know they couldn't do the 3 o'clock game because the Patriots are playing, but yeah, I thought they would take that game. And I mean, if you don't take that game, what game do you take, really?
I'm with you. Have fun. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your loved ones. Safe travels. And thanks, as always, for joining us, man. I greatly appreciate it, Mike.
All right, Jordan. Anytime, you and your family have a great Thanksgiving, too.
You, too. We'll be back to close up our number one after this. The Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com.
At Cajun.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 52 minutes after the hour, there was an upset in college basketball last night as Michigan State, the number one ranked team in the country, fell out there at the Maui Gym Classic. They are now playing Georgia in the consolation bracket, and they're up 61-36, 15 minutes and some change left to go in the ballgame. Here at 3 o'clock, the Raging Cajuns will tip it off out in Vegas against UC Irvine. So good luck to Bob Marlin and his crew. And then tomorrow night, it's a big matchup in the Big Easy. As you know, when LeBron comes to town, that's one thing. I mean, that's a lot. Now, when he's getting joined by Anthony Davis, who's making his first trip back to the Smoothie King Center, that's something else. The Lakers are currently atop the Western Conference of the NBA, 15-2, winners of 8 straight. The Pelicans have lost 2 in a row. They finished 1-2 in their 3-game road trip. Currently, the Pels are 6 up, 11 down, 2.5 games out of the 8th and final playoff spot in the West, with Phoenix, Sacramento, and Oklahoma City ahead of them. So, lots to a lot of basketball still to be played. But with AD coming back, courtesy of Stadium and Shams Charania, he was asked, AD, would you have done anything differently about your departure from New Orleans? Okay. Froze up. My man CD is fervently working on it. But LeBron James leading the NBA in assists, along with AD, they have just gelled perfectly. Here is AD talking about, would you have done anything differently?
No. I probably would never flick the fan off. but it was just like a thing in a moment, man. You know, like you just think about like all the stuff you gave to the city and how much good you've done for the city. And, you know, once you feel like you need to move on, obviously, you know, it's going to be friction from the fans, the organization, like, which is natural. That's what's supposed to happen. No one wants to see their guy leave. But it was just like last game, couple games left, and it was just like it just kept going. It was just like, hey man, we 3 weeks passed, it's a month passed, and it just never stopped. And it was just like it was weighing on me a little bit, like, man, like, should I wait until the end of the season or like whatever? But, you know, and the fans just hit me with something, and it was just like it was just all the emotion bottled up in one, and it just happened, you know. So that's one thing I do regret about, you know, flicking a fan off.
Yeah, you should have waited till the end of the season. So what are you going to feel like when you return to NOLA?
When I go back, I'm going to have mixed emotions. And it's all because a great 6.5 years, and then that last half, it was, you know, so it was just like, you know, I know the fans going to boo me. You know, I got booed when I was still playing there, you know, right. So... but it's gonna be fun for me. Like, man, it's another game. You know, I just want to win a game. You know, I don't care what AD had 10 points. They shut him down. All right, I want to win. You know, but I was talking with someone the other day. Like, you think they gonna give you a tribute video? I don't know.
I don't either. So finally, is this the game of the year in your mind, AD?
It's gonna be a fun game. I think that's a game of the year for me, right. Just because I've never been through it. So it's like, you know, what's gonna happen? Am I gonna play well? Like, I know I'm gonna be nervous. I never get nervous before a game, but I'm probably be nervous that game.
8:30 tip, Smoothie King Center sold out. Smoothie King Center. I tried to get some tickets, and all my sources, Jordan can't get any. Sold out. So good for them. Lakers are really, really good. The class of the West right now, 15-2. The Denver Nuggets are 12-3. LSU basketball gets back on the hardwood on Friday. We're starting to get into it. Pretty soon it'll be conference play. But it's all about football, and deservedly so. All right, hour number one's in the books. Don't forget, from 103.7 The Game, Christmas time, right? It's here, and we want to get you in the spirit of things. So Delta Media has you covered with Louisiana's Christmas Channel that's flavored by Tabasco. You can listen live at LouisianaChristmasChannel.com. Download the free mobile app on your iPhone or Android now so you can have 24/7 commercial-free Christmas music right at your fingertips. The Louisiana Christmas Channel, flavored by Tabasco. Hour number two, straight ahead.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown,
streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go on this rivalry week. The Saints and the Falcons on Thursday night. LSU, 6 p.m., Tiger Stadium against Texas A&M, and at Cajun Field at 6:30, it's the ULM Warhawks and the Raging Cajuns of one Billy Napier. When the Tigers get into the end zone, Ja'Marr Chase says, we better tone it down a little bit with the end zone celebration.
I don't think the dance is never going to be over, to be honest. So, I mean, I don't know. The refs didn't like us that game, so we just had to calm it down just a little bit.
Yeah, let them play. Let them have some fun. As long as it's not too long and it's not demeaning to the other team, let the kids have some fun. LSU landed a commitment from the top cornerback of the 2022 class. Kid from the state of Mississippi, Kamari Rogers, committed to LSU on Twitter. The third player to commit to the Tigers 2022 class. The recruiting just keeps getting better and better for LSU. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take a walk around the sports water cooler. CD, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, Mr. Domain, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing pretty well, Jordy. It's definitely, we're getting closer and closer towards a lot of really fun ball games involving LSU, the Cajuns, the Saints, even the Pels tomorrow night.
Yeah.
A lot of things are on tap. I'm just all the way up looking forward to seeing what's going to happen there. But we got to kind of take a step back and look at what happened last night. Monday Night Football. Did Lamar Jackson just have what we saw with Joe Burrow in the Alabama game? This was the game where it felt like maybe Lamar Jackson all but locked up that MVP race.
I think you're right. He threw for 5 touchdowns. He ran for 95 yards, and the Ravens just destroyed the LA Rams 45-6. I still can't believe this is the guy that LSU stopped in that bowl game. He was a non-factor, but now he's the fastest guy on the field. He's the most athletic guy on the field, and they just can't stop him. He was one of the greatest performances ever in Monday Night Football history, and I don't think that's a stretch saying so. So good for him. He led the Ravens to touchdowns on all 6 of his drives, and he continues to rewrite the NFL record book. He's something.
It's nothing short of impressive, Jordy, and you got to wonder how many NFL defensive coordinators have been blowing up one Dave Aranda's phone to try and get ideas on how to stop Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, good luck with that. He's the first player with at least 3,000 passing yards and 1,500 rushing yards over his first 2 seasons in NFL history. And this was a guy that people were saying, we may have to move him to wide receiver because he can't play quarterback. And so many GMs passed on him. Even Baltimore moved back in the draft. And finally, he was there. They said, we're going to take him. But here's the only way we take him is if we change everything that we're doing and we fit our scheme, our concept, our approach around this player. Don't try and put him into a square peg. No, we have to change everything. So credit to Baltimore. Boy, they're 9-2, and they look good.
They look really, really good. And, Jordy, you got to think about it. They're going to wind up being a team that's going to cause a lot of havoc in the AFC. Could they wind up knocking down the big dog and the Patriots in the postseason?
They already beat them in the regular season, so I don't see why they couldn't beat them in the postseason. And Bill Belichick, who always takes away what you do best, couldn't take away Lamar Jackson. So I think old Bill is sweating a little bit on this one. They're good. They're dangerous.
They're good. They're dangerous. And, man, it's just going to be fun to see what happens with those Baltimore Ravens. Thankfully, the Saints don't have to deal with them. Because, man,
I mean, Super Bowl, we hope. Super Bowl will be fine.
Super Bowl will be fine, Jordy. Hopefully, it's not like several of the matchups they've seen in the past with those Baltimore Ravens, because the Dirty Birds have definitely had the Saints number for quite some time.
I think the Saints quite possibly overlooked them. And once Atlanta got rolling, it's hard to stop because those guys are pros. They're NFL players. I think the Falcons have the Saints' undivided attention this week. So I think Thursday night will enjoy a feast after our feast. Yes.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see what those two teams bring to the table. Man, we got to kind of dive into a little bit more about LSU, A&M, and we heard a lot of stuff, especially from Jacoby Stevens and Grant Delpit, and how they've been preparing for a lot of weird things that could happen. Do you expect this to be a weird game where it's like not quite seven overtimes, but we see this be a very just weird ball game in terms of the way it's played between these two programs?
I don't know about that. I don't foresee seven overtimes ever again. I just think LSU's the better team. I think it's great that LSU has the attention and the focus on A&M. What they have to do, as every player has said it, because they heard it from Coach Orgeron, is emotion can take you only so far. You've got to execute. You can't do things out of control, because that's when you get in trouble. You must do your assignments. A&M is one of those teams that people forget about, but they're still there, and they've had a very difficult schedule. They've lost to number one Clemson. They lost at the time to number one Alabama. They lost to Georgia close. They lost to Auburn close, and now they have number one LSU. So tough schedule. Jimbo's a good coach. He'll have his guys ready, but I think Orgeron and the Tigers will prevail comfortably in this one.
I can't wait for Saturday, Jordy. But, you know, before we kind of wrap things up here, I got to bring this up because did you check out the Miami Heat's Vice Wave jerseys?
I love them.
Shouldn't that just be their regular unis? Like, I think that's absolutely. If you want to wind up kind of like moving on and changing things up post the D-Wade, the Big Three kind of era that we've seen, I think the Vice Wave is the way to go. I'd love to see that be more of a consistent uni for the Heat. I'd love to see it just be their style going forward, because I think that works.
Oh, I love it. The white, the aqua blue, the pink, the old vibe from Phil Collins and the songs.
Miami Vice.
Miami Vice songs and all. That was great. I think it's superb. I think that sets them apart from any other team in the league. I'm all for it. Count me in.
It's definitely probably one of the best things I've seen the Miami and the NBA come up with in general, seeing a lot of these, like the what don't they call them, like city alternates or something like that?
Something like that, yes.
Somewhere along those lines. I'd love to see that be done a lot more and have like a lot more of an influence with the community. You got to imagine what a really good, like, Pels, like, city kit would look like.
Beignets. I don't know what it would be. How bad of a response is Anthony Davis going to get tomorrow night?
Oh man, I mean, they had before on I think Thursday night they wound up having his name up, his face up on the big screen, and immediately everybody booed. So you can about imagine he is going to wind up getting a pretty warm reception. I can about imagine.
Joe Burrow on the cover of Sports Illustrated, from average Joe to number one pro. How about that?
It's amazing.
How about that? It's amazing. It's a great photo. It's a great pick of him. There you go. All right, CD, thank you very much. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some Cajun Chef hot sauce with you to Thanksgiving, because all that bird and the sides are going to taste a heck of a lot better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Get to know the foe We'll find out all you need to know about ULM next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, it's time to get to know the foe, right? And with that in mind, the Raging Cajuns taking on their arch rival, UL Monroe. So we go to the Monroe News star and our good friend Adam Hunsucker, who's kind enough to join us. Happy early Thanksgiving, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jordy. Same to you, man. Should make for a good week down there in Lafayette.
Absolutely. Five of the past six meetings have just been decided by a touchdown or less. ULM is one win from bowl eligibility. That means they're dangerous. The Raging Cajuns, of course, are red hot, 9-2. They've wrapped up the their division of the conference. So let's talk about UL Monroe. What have they done best this year?
Score points, really. The defense has not been the strength by any stretch of the imagination, but they have. The Warhawks have been very good offensively, especially with Caleb Evans, a quarterback, a dual threat guy. I'm sure the Cajun fans will remember the last time he came down there in that 2017 when he had about 470-some all-purpose yards and tied a school record with five rushing touchdowns. But you look at that, and that's really the strength of this team. And you look at their overall body of work, and it's, again, another one of those seasons that's kind of common with this program. They're just right there. And they can't really find a way to get over that hump, whether it be an overtime loss at Florida State by a point or, you know, losing to an Arkansas State team by a touchdown that you had a three-score lead on at one point in the second quarter. You know, just things like that. And, you know, unfortunately for them, they're kind of in this similar situation where even if they get the six wins and upset the Cajuns, I'm not sure that'll be enough to get them in a bowl game.
Okay. Adam Hunsucker, kind enough to join us, Monroe News star. Caleb Evans, boy, he went out in style, right? In his final home game as a senior, 346 all-purpose yards. Wow. How much running, how much catching, how much returning? Break it down for me.
Well, what's funny is we actually had a little issue with the stat crew, so it was 400 total yards.
Okay.
Those pop passes come back to get you, the ones that look like a jet sweep but are really the pass, and that's kind of what happened with the issue there. But, you know, it wasn't just him, too. It was also Cortez Cisco, another senior linebacker.
Yes.
He had 19 tackles in that game.
Jeesh.
So, you know, it was a deal where, you know, these guys knew what was on the line, and it was interesting watching that game because Coastal Carolina, it was like watching the same team play each other. They both could score points, and not much going on in the way of defense. But to their credit, ULM's defense found a way to get a stop, get some stops in the fourth quarter, and you know Caleb Evans has kind of carried the offense on his back, and they were able to get the lead and hold on to it until the end and set themselves up for another. Like you mentioned earlier, it could be a crazy game between these two. It always seems like whenever something's on the line in this game, things tend to go haywire.
You must have known it was going to be one of those days against Coastal when in the first quarter, Evans found Marquise McCray, 98-yard touchdown pass to set a school record for catch and run on a pass. I mean, that's kind of a harbinger of some good things to come.
It really was, and you know, it broke a record that has stood for you know the better part of 20 years, and I think you could say that both ways too, because one of the few bright spots on ULM's defense has been the play of Corey Strotter out there at corner. He's he's leading the Sun Belt in interceptions, and you know he's really kind of established himself as the best cover corner in the conference this year. And he ended up giving up a big play on a Coastal Carolina's first series, which hadn't happened all year. I mean, we're talking about a kid that hasn't even allowed a touchdown yet, so. That lets you know that you kind of was best to just strap in because this one was going to be one of those back and forth type games, and it was. I mean, considering the lead changed five times in the second half.
Your quarterback Evans, as you said, accounted for 400 yards, but Josh Johnson led the Warhawks 19 carries for a buck 29 and two touchdowns. So it looks like you can, like you said, you score a lot of points. This is a dangerous offensive club.
It really is. And Josh Johnson has really been kind of the glue guy that has, you know, made all of this work. Because if you go back to last year, a lot was expected of Caleb Evans as a junior, but it was one of those deals to where ULM lacked a consistent running game. And with that happening, he would press and try to, and it ended up trying to make plays on his own and force those down the field, and those led to turnovers. But getting Josh Johnson in here and having him ready to go, I mean, this is a kid that they found last year. He was at one time committed to Ole Miss. That didn't work out, and he ended up at ULM. But he came in late during August camp last year, didn't have enough time to really get acclimated to the offense or get in playing shape. But since he's done that, I mean, at one point he led the Sun Belt Conference in rushing for a good 4 or 5 weeks in the middle of the season. So, you know, with his play has really opened everything up and really allowed Caleb to pick his spots and, you know, take over games when they need it.
Adam, you mentioned this. The crazy things seem to happen in this game between the Raging Cajuns and the Warhawks. What comes to mind since you've been following this? What's the craziest ending you've seen or the craziest occurrence that you've seen?
Well, there's been plenty. I mean, we can start with last year. You know, if you look at it from the ULM perspective, you know, they went to those last two games 6-4, leading the Sun Belt West. All they had, if they had won both of them, they would have won the West or just gotten one of them. So they'd have played in a bowl game. You know, you lose that Arkansas State, and then, you know, the Cajuns come down to Malone Stadium and they played a whale of a game, and they had a chance to tie it at the end but miss a field goal, and the Cajuns go on to win the West, and ULM sitting at home. So you got one like that, and from the Raging Cajun perspective, I mean, go back to 2013 when all that team had to do was beat ULM, and they would have clinched an outright Sun Belt Conference title. Mm. But Colton Browning and that senior class who had gone 8-5 the year before, they found a way to get up one last time and left Cajun Field with a victory, and y'all had to split the title with Arkansas State, I believe. So, I mean, this has been going back even before my time on, you know, just decades and decades of whenever one team has really has something to play for, it always goes haywire.
I thought Colton Browning still had eligibility. I mean, he only played 10 years for the Warhawks. I thought he was still playing.
Right. I mean, he definitely was a good one. And, you know, you look at what Caleb Evans has done. I mean, Caleb is going to lead with – he's going to be second only to Browning in basically every statistical record for you at ULM. And that's a lineage of quarterbacks that goes back to not just Colton Browning, but Stan Humphries, Doug Peterson, Bubby Brister, you know, a lot of good players that have come through that school over the decades.
Adam Hunsucker, Monroe News star, kind enough to join us. You listen to Coach Viator, you talk to him, you talk to the players. What do they say about the Raging Cajuns, and what's deep down inside? Is there so many bowl games, there's a hatred for one another. Is that what this game is? Is that kind of what the feeling is about this one?
Well, hate may be a little strong word, but I don't think these teams like each other very much. And some of that is you got to look at it too from two perspectives. One, you look at just the nature of the rivalry between those two schools and the fact that of what Louisiana Lafayette's been able to do over the past decade in terms of really elevating that program with facilities and resources and money and cost of attendance and being able to attract the kind of coaches they have on Billy Napier's staff right now, and just how impressive that is, and on the other token, what ULM hasn't been able to do in that regard. So there's a frustration there among the fan base. As far as inside the building, I mean, it's a familiarity breeds contempt kind of situation, because you look at the number of kids that play high school football in the state of Louisiana that are on both rosters. You've got teammates going head-to-head or guys that played each other in high school and may not have liked each other back then, and that's translated to college. And then you look at the staffs. I mean, you look at Billy Napier's staff. Rob Sale, Tim Leje, Lamar Morgan, and Matt Pallage were all on Viator's inaugural staff at ULM. So those guys have all coached together, and even going all the way back to McNeese. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on, and, you know, these guys want to get after it and beat the others.
Well, Raging Cajuns are on a roll, as I mentioned. They're 9-2. They're one of the better group of five teams out there. And this, as I said, always seems to produce close games. So for ULM to come in here and to upset the apple cart, what has to happen?
I think they have to come out and not get overwhelmed early. They need to really kind of, you know, hold the line, so to speak.
Okay.
Find a way to score points and get into the fourth quarter with a realistic shot within one or two scores. Because, you know, if it follows the script like some of their road games at Appalachian State or at Georgia Southern, if they get down early, then it'll balloon. So that's what they really have to do, and that could be easier said than done because, you know, you look at what the Cajuns have running the football with Regis and Calais and all those guys, and ULM has not been good against the run all year. And it doesn't help that maybe their best defensive lineman, Donald Lewis, was ejected in the second half against Coastal Carolina for targeting, so he's not even going to get to play until the third quarter.
Is Evans the kind of quarterback that can make things up on his own and improvise and put the fear of into a defense? Is he that type of a player?
Caleb definitely can do that. And, you know, the thing about it is as he's gotten older and matured, he's realized more when is the time to do that and when is not the time to do that.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of what's helped him, you know, elevate his overall game and quit turning the ball over so much and make better decisions. But, yeah, on any given Saturday, Caleb can take over a football game. Now, I think this goes without question that the Cajuns have the best defense in the Sun Belt. Maybe not the best that ULM has seen all year, but certainly so in conference play. So we'll see how that matchup goes.
Adam, thank you so much for your time. Have a safe drive from Fun Row to Lafayette, and happy Thanksgiving early to you and yours, man. Thank you so much.
Right back at you. See you guys on Saturday.
All right, you got it, Adam Hunsucker of the Monroe News Star. Cajuns favored by a bunch in this thing. I think Levi Lewis, again, is the difference. And he mentioned Ron Roberts' defense, pretty darn good. Michael Hugenin talks all things college football, all the other rivalries, including LSU, A&M, Cajuns, and the Warhawks, and who wins the one at the Big House. We'll have predictions coming up next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Pump day!
And we welcome in our good friend from The Athletic, Michael Hugenin. It's rivalry week. It's the grand finale of the college football regular season. We've got bitter rivals going on with stakes ranging from national title implications, division title hopes, to just good old-fashioned hatred across the board. Michael, it's that time of the year. Good, happy early Thanksgiving, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate that. Same to you and all your listeners. It's sort of hard to believe that we are at the last weekend of the regular season. It's sort of depressing in a way.
Yeah. Well, it's been a remarkable season so far, but let's start with we've had our Thanksgiving meal and you know, we're flipping around going, okay, Ole Miss at Mississippi State. Boy, does a coach need in Joe Moorhead, does he need a win badly in the Egg Bowl? But I just think Ole Miss is a better team. Well, how do you see the Egg Bowl this year?
Yeah, I think Ole Miss has done some good things offensively this year under Rich Rodriguez on the ground. The passing attack is not very good, but they run the ball extremely effectively. And that's better than Mississippi State, which really doesn't do anything that well offensively. So this is an interesting game. Bitter rivalry, obviously. Ooh. And as usual, it doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
Though this is a case, Mississippi doesn't mean anything nationally. Mississippi State needs a win to become bowl eligible. They've been to 8 bowls in a row. They're one of only 5 schools in the SEC that's been to a bowl every year this decade. They want that to continue. Ole Miss, obviously, they are not going to a bowl. They only got 4 wins. But a win for the Rebels gives them the same record as the Bulldogs and keeps Mississippi State out of a bowl. So I think Ole Miss has something to play for. Mississippi State has more to play for. But I agree with you. I think Ole Miss is the better team. And if Ole Miss comes in fully engaged, and I think they will, I think Ole Miss will run the ball effectively and win the game.
I'm with you. That's a Thursday night, 6:30 Central Time ball game on ESPN. Let's go and flip it to early Friday, a noon game in Charlottesville, Virginia Tech at Virginia. Virginia has been one of the most consistent teams in a dreadful ACC Coastal. They're one win from its first division title, but they have to do it against Virginia Tech, who has caught fire, winning its past 3 ACC games by an average score of 36-6. So the Wahoos versus Tech, who you got?
Yeah, this is huge. Virginia is the only – the Coastal is weird. They've had – it's a 17 division, 6 different winners in the past 6 years. Virginia is the only team that hasn't won, so they're trying to make it 7 winners in 7 seasons. The winner wins the Coastal, plays Clemson in the ACC championship game. So there's a ton on the line. Virginia Tech has won 15 in a row in this series. That's incredible. So a lot for UVA to play for. Virginia Tech was sort of left for dead when they lost that Friday night game to Duke. Duke hammered them. Ever since then, Virginia Tech only lost once. They're playing really good football. The offense has caught fire. This looks like a Justin Fuente offense. They're putting a lot of points up in a wide variety of ways. Yeah, this is a fascinating game. I think Virginia's got the better defense, but this is Virginia Tech's Bud Foster. It's his last regular season game. They played phenomenal defense last week. I still think Virginia wins. I think the home field advantage is gigantic. And plus, I have to admit, I want to see 7 different winners in 7 seasons. So I think Virginia's going to win. I think the Hokies are going to have a lot of problems with Bryce Perkins, the UVA quarterback.
LSU beat Alabama after 8 straight losses. They've lost 15 straight to Virginia Tech. It's coming to an end. Go Hoos. Virginia's going to get that win. Here's an interesting one. 2 teams that could play this week and then play again next week. In the AAC, Cincinnati has secured the AAC East. They're the 19th-ranked team in the country. They travel to Memphis to take on the 18th-ranked Tigers, who, if Memphis wins, they would win the West, and then they would have to play each other next week for the AAC title. Memphis hosting Cincy. What you think?
Yeah, big game also, because it appears – if one of these teams wins out, it will be the highest-ranked Group of 5 team, which means they get a New Year's 6 bowl bid. The interesting thing about this, you pointed out, Cincinnati has already won the East. Memphis is tied with Navy in the West, but Navy plays Houston. Houston's not good, so Navy's going to win. Yeah. So if Navy wins and Memphis loses, Navy wins the division. So the problem with Navy, obviously, they still have one more game after potentially the conference title game, because they play Army 2 weeks from now. So a lot on the line in this one. I think Memphis is the better team. They're playing at home. Since he's sort of been living on the edge, they've won 9 in a row. But I think Memphis gets them and sets up, like you said, a rematch. And, you know, something that's extremely unfortunate. If you're Memphis, you will have beaten your main competition for the league title. And then, a week later, you got to play them again. but I think Memphis is going to win the regular season finale to clinch the AAC West.
He is Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. It's rivalry week in college football. The Apple Cup, Washington State at Washington. These two teams were a combined 18-4 when they met in 2017 and 2018. This year, they're 12-10. And Washington has had the better hand. Mike Leach hasn't beaten Chris Peterson. Gee whiz, he's 0-6 against Chris Peterson and Washington. Is this Mike Leach's last game as the head coach at Washington State? Is he moving on to other pastures? Who knows? Who wins the Apple Cup?
Yeah, I think you can make a case that Washington and Texas are the two most disappointing teams in the country. Washington, Jacob Eason has been wasted this year. Their offense is not good. And that's a direct reflection of Peterson's choice as offensive coordinator. Bush Hamden is not a good coordinator. Again, they have wasted Jacob Eason in that arm. Washington last week, very desultory performance in losing to Colorado. The game is in Seattle. Presumably that gives them a little bit of an edge. But Washington State, extremely difficult to defend because all they do is throw the ball. Normally, Washington secondary has been the team's strength, and they've shut down Leach's offense during that six-game winning streak they have over Leach. But this year's secondary at Washington has given up a ton of big plays, and they have seemingly three or four breakdowns every game. Washington State makes you pay for that. Now, flip side, if Washington does what it does best, i.e. run the ball, they're going to win. But if Washington is hell-bent on, oh, we're going to let Jacob Eason throw the ball 35 times, Washington State wins. So this one's all about the run. Salvon Ahmed, Richard Newton, maybe Sean McGrew, those guys are going to be huge for Washington. I think Washington does win, but I would not be surprised if the Cougars win, and regardless, I think Peterson's going to shake up his staff.
Michael Hugin, The Athletic. We flip over to early Saturday, and it's the game, number 2 Ohio State at number 13 Michigan. Michigan's gotten better. They've played better. Their second half turnaround has been great, but can they finally get over the hump and beat the Buckeyes for the first time in 8 years?
Yeah, Harbaugh has never beaten Ohio State. He was winless against Meyer, and now he gets the first chance to go against Ryan Day. I think Ohio State is a better team. That's why they're favored by 9 on the road. Mm-hmm. It's going to be snowing, potential snow rain mix, nasty weather. I don't think it bothers Ohio State. I know they have a pretty good passing attack. They got really good receivers. Fields is really good. They also got the best running back in the game, and their offensive line is better than Michigan's too. So I think Ohio State's going to win this game. They've won 12 in a row in Big Ten play. I think they increase it to 13, and the pressure on Harbaugh intensifies because he will still be winless against Ohio State. I think Ohio State's going to win this game by double digits.
We go to the 2:30 bracket, and that on CBS, number 5 Alabama at number 15 Auburn. It's the Iron Bowl. Early this week, Nick Saban came out and said, quote, Auburn is the best team we've played probably so far this year, and this will be the most challenging place we've played so far. What do you think LSU fans are thinking about that comment?
I think the second part's correct. Yes. Playing at Auburn is going to be difficult, and you're especially playing without Tua. I don't think too highly of Mac Jones. I think Auburn has a great chance to win. I'm interested in seeing what Mac Jones can do against a real defense because he hasn't played against a real defense, frankly, this year.
Yeah.
Auburn can sort of, in a way, salvage its season. I think this has been a mildly disappointing season for Auburn. They got the big win early on when they beat Oregon, but they've lost to Florida, they've lost to LSU, they've lost to Georgia. All three of those losses were, they weren't blowouts, but at the same time, I don't know if anybody really ever thought at halftime that Auburn was going to win any of those games. Their offense was inept against Florida for the whole game, for three quarters against Georgia, and inept for about half the game against LSU. So Alabama's offense, if Tua was there, this game, Alabama wins. But with Mac Jones, I think Auburn has a legit chance, and maybe finally Bo Nix plays a consistent four-quarter game against an opponent with a pulse. And I don't know if that's possible for him, but this certainly is not a vintage Alabama D, I actually think Auburn's going to win because, I'm not a believer in Mac Jones.
Does Nick Saban go revert and say, hey, we can't win with Mac Jones trying to do the offense that Tua's in? Do we go back and just start running the football with that stud they've got? Don't try and turn it over. Let your defense and your kicking. Does he try and turn back the clock a little bit?
Thing is, if I'm Auburn, I hope he does that because okay. I'm pretty darn confident my defensive front can basically even everything out. Alabama's going to hit some plays, but I also think the Auburn defensive front, I know. Auburn's defensive front's the best one Alabama's seen. So if I'm Derek Brown, if I'm Marlon Davidson, Nick Coe, Big Cat Bryant, I'm excited about this game. I think Auburn's going to win. And if Alabama does want to, like, let's make this a 2009 game where mm-hmm. we run it 50 times and throw it 20, I think Auburn's like, bring that on. That's the kind of game, frankly, we hope you play because okay. your receivers scare us even if Mac Jones is throwing to them.
Michael Hugan of The Athletic, I think, it's not getting enough recognition, but I think a really good game. Number 12, Wisconsin at number 10,
game.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Wisconsin's had back-to-back losses against Illinois and Ohio State, and that knocked them out of Big Ten contention. But Minnesota left the door open with its loss against Iowa. This is big boy football. You got the Gophers or you got the Badgers?
Yeah, and this is it's a border state rivalry. It's Minnesota. It's a much bigger deal for Minnesota than it is for Wisconsin because Wisconsin's a better program. But this year, everything's sort of aligned for Minnesota. P.J. Fleck, his upbeat enthusiasm, his relentless upbeat enthusiasm turns people off, turns some people off. But it's also obvious that his players have totally bought into it. They got some good receivers on that squad. Quarterback ain't bad. They play okay defense. Minnesota's passing game's a lot better than Wisconsin's. Wisconsin needs a huge game from Jonathan Taylor, who's had three 200-yard games in a row. I think people sort of wrote him off as a Heisman guy after they lost those two games, but he is a great running back. This is going to be his last regular season game in a Wisconsin uniform. You know, maybe they win and they play in the Big Ten championship game. But he is an elite back. I don't know if Minnesota can stop him. So I think Wisconsin wins. But Minnesota, regardless, is a great story. They're nationally relevant, frankly, for the first time since 1960 when they won a part of the national title. So Fleck deserves a ton of credit. And I cannot imagine anybody else winning National Coach of the Year other than P.J. Fleck because it's Minnesota, and they're going to win 10 games at least. Well, they've already won 10, so he's done a phenomenal job there this year.
We shall see. Saturday night, 6:30 Central Time, Colorado at number 7, Utah. Great opportunity to send a message to the College Football Playoff Committee and a national television audience. What do you think?
Yeah, Oregon spit the bit last weekend. I don't think Utah is. Utah is destroying teams lately. This is a nasty team, and I mean nasty in a good way. They're extremely physical. They want you to know they're physical, and they want to prove their physicality to you. It's like the old SEC from the 80s and 90s. We're the better man, and if we have to prove it to you over 60 minutes in the trenches, we're going to do that. Zach Moss is a high-level running back. He's a former high school star in South Florida. He's got great speed, incredibly tough. Tyler Huntley's a pretty darn good quarterback. Was a high school teammate of Zach Moss in South Florida, so you know that guy's a scrappy kid too. I think Utah blows Colorado's doors in. To try to make one more statement before the Pac-12 title game. The Pac-12 title game obviously has lost a ton of luster because Oregon lost. And I think now, frankly, I'm not sure there's much of a hope for Utah to get in because I think if both Pac-12 championship game participants were 11-1, you can make a case that, okay, the winner deserves to get in. But Oregon losing the way it did.
Yeah.
I think Utah's hopes are dashed, but that makes this game all the more important for Utah because the eye test does matter, and I think the manner in which they play matters, and I think the point spread matters, and I think Utah is going to blow Colorado's doors in.
Let's go to Stillwater, Oklahoma. Bedlam, number 9, Oklahoma, at number 21, Oklahoma State. Quickly, what do you think?
Oklahoma State's missing its starting quarterback and its stud wide receiver. So there's no excuse if Oklahoma loses. None.
All right.
Oklahoma State does have Chuba Hubbard, who's a really great running back. But stopping one guy is a lot easier than stopping 30. So I think Oklahoma wins double digits.
Let's go close to home in Lafayette. UL Monroe will be at UL, the Raging Cajuns. This is a rivalry game. The Cajuns are 9-2. They are going to be playing App State again for the Sun Belt Conference Championship. Nobody shows up to watch the Raging Cajuns, but who do you got?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think ULL is really good for the Sun Belt. I think and you point out this is a rivalry game. If I'm a Raging Cajun player, coach, or fan, I want to go into the Sun Belt game off an impressive performance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think ULL wins. I think Napier has done a really nice job. And potentially, I guess, if there are some better group of five jobs open, no offense to ULL, but if there are some better group of five jobs open, maybe in the AAC, Napier gets it. He's done a really good job down there.
And finally, Texas A&M at number 1 LSU. Last year, a 74-72 7 overtimer that A&M won. LSU quickly moved on after Arkansas and said it is on. They want this one badly. Do they get it?
Yeah, I think they do. A&M is playing better the second half of the season. Part of that's the schedule. But they hung in there with Georgia last week. And I'll be honest, though, Georgia's offense is just not very good.
No.
Whereas LSU's offense, because they can throw the heck out of the ball, is good. So I think A&M can make this interesting for a half, but I fully expect this to be a final margin of at least 2 touchdowns, maybe 3. Now that the LSU defense is not elite at all. They got some good players overall, though. I think even Orgeron would say the defense a little bit disappointing. Then again, when you're scoring 40 and 50 points a game and you give up 30, who really cares?
Right.
But that's why I think A&M has the potential to keep this interesting for a while. But they don't have the firepower to hang with LSU for 60 minutes. So I think this is at least a 2 TD win for LSU, if not 3.
Boy, this is your kind of weekend, isn't it?
This is a good one. I mean, rivalry games. Even, you know, you brought up Washington State, Oregon State. Oregon State needs one win to become bowl eligible. I don't think they're going to get it. But this is a big weekend for rivalry games. And that's, you know, Florida State. We didn't even mention that. Georgia Tech, Clemson, South Carolina. There's a lot of intrastate hatred this week.
Yes.
And that's what? College football sort of revolves around hatred. So
this is
a fun weekend. You know, no matter who you're a fan of, there's games Thursday, one game Thursday, a bunch Friday, a lot of good ones on Saturday. And even if, you know, who cares? You know, you mentioned both Washington and Washington State are 6-5. So what? That's going to be a fun game to watch because of the intrastate hatred. So,
well, then sit back, relax, enjoy it all, and thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to all the Huguenins from all of us, and thank you for always making our show that much better.
I appreciate it. Talk to you guys next week. Thanks.
You got it, my man. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic back to wrap it up next. All right, it's closing time. Let's wrap it up with a quick history lesson. Very important one. On this day, November 26, 1984, John W. Meekham Jr., announced that the New Orleans Saints were up for sale. He purchased the newly enfranchised team in 1967 for $8.5 million. He put the team up for sale for $75 million, sold it to Tom Benson in 1985 for $70 million. The Saints are now worth $2.3 billion. Yeah, on this day, November 26, 1984. Happy birthday to you and yours. Happy birthday to 44th to DJ Khaled. Happy 80th to Tina Turner. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be back tomorrow, same time. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.